Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And it's season 22, episode 11. So Whoa. We are really turning the corner. I think this is what they refer to as the semifinals.
Whatever you call it. I don't know. Is this the semifinal going into the semifinal? I'm shocked. Either way, I'm kind of shocked because I'm like, aren't there seven people? How is this the semifinals? Like, we're only halfway through.
Yeah.
The whole kit and caboodle, you know?
This season's been really funny with how they've categorized, like, when things happen in the season, i.e. the episode 4 mid-season finale of Last Chance Kitchen.
Episode 11 final finale, which I, as we discussed last week, I'm a huge fan of because I think that's unfair to, like, send somebody into the actual finale. But
yes.
Well, Nancy, before we dive in, we have some leftovers.
Yes. One in particular that I am – really excited about. Okay, Bits. I think it was actually two episodes ago. We were talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and you very rudely corrected me.
It was pretty rude.
Was it Endgame? What movie were we even talking about?
You were talking about how you worked for Marvel at your agency.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And it was something to that effect. Yeah, it was like Endgame.
It was the Black Panther, Endgame, Infinity War era.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy, like that, which I feel was prime time, but whatever. And I believe that you have some information about the definitive timeline of the Marvel Cinematic Universe to share with us today.
Yes. Okay. I will try to be brief for people who could care less, but I will use this opportunity to say that I was correct when I corrected you in saying that the Infinity War movies, the like sort of like culmination of the Avengers universe, was phase 3. So Zooming out a bit,
please.
We have three phases that comprise the Infinity Saga.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yes.
Grammatically correct use of comprise. Good for you.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, I'm done talking. I'm here to
Okay. Learn. So phase 1 is what kicks off the MCU. That's the Iron Man, the Thor, et cetera. This is sort of like the first instantiation of all of these superheroes.
Yeah.
Phase 2 is we're expanding that universe. We've got some sequels. We've got Guardians of the Galaxy. When we move into phase 3, this is where everything kind of comes home to roost. So we've got Thor Ragnarok, arguably I think one of the best movies in the MCU.
Yeah, that's a good one.
No, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
And then this is also the phase where we have Avengers, Infinity War, and Endgame. And this ends around 2019. Since then, we've had a lot of slop. Phase 4 is when we start pulling in the Disney shows. And we're actually, if you can believe it, Nancy, we are in phase 6 right now. So somewhere we lost the plot. Truly, the plot was lost. There was a few like interesting Disney shows. They don't really know how to stick the landing.
The shows to me are gilding the lily. Like,
yes, dude. We don't need a multiverse.
We do not need a multiverse.
Pick a single one.
This is not an omni-channel digital strategy, Marvel. This is just entertainment. Like, please chill out. Also, I find that it's gotten way too messy and confusing. Like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I remember learning when I was working for Marvel that like pretty much Marvel was bankrupt in the early 2000s. And in order to stay afloat, they sold off the IP to all of the mutants, which were at the time in the comic books, the most profitable characters. It's X-Men, Spider-Man. And so then they sold it to Sony, who made the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, which we grew up on.
Yes.
And then they also made all of the X-Men movies, and they've made them and remade them and made them and remade them. And then comes the MCU. All that Marvel had left were like the heroes that actually no one cared about, like Iron Man, Captain America, Thor. Like they were not popular characters in the comic books.
Right.
And they were like, okay, we're going to shoot our shot with Iron Man. Like, let's see if we can do something cool here. And it worked. And then the MCU, as we know it today, came about so much so that they had enough money to buy back the IP from Sony. And so Disney, which owns Marvel, bought the IP from Sony. And then we had this problem of there was a MCU Spider-Man and there was a Sony Universe Spider-Man.
Right.
And they were like eight of the same characters. And so then they made that movie Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse in order to like collapse all of the Spider-Men into a single timeline. And it's just too – okay, all to say, long walk for a ham sandwich, as my boss at the time of my working for Marvel would have said. It's too much. Like, just stop making us do homework and let us enjoy a silly little movie.
If – yeah, this was the era of the sky beam. Everything was a sky beam.
Yes.
Literally the only plot device and MacGuffin was some form of invading – character that came to Earth via a massive sky beam. But you know what, Nancy? We're not here to talk about this.
Oh my God. That's enough Marvel knowledge to last a lifetime.
Speaking though of the Top Chef cinematic universe, we need to talk about the dinner that we went to this past Monday, which was excellent.
Oh my God. Tell them about it.
Okay, so we went to Gregory Gourdet's new restaurant here in Fidai, NYC. I don't know that anybody's ever said that.
Yeah, here in Fidai.
Here in Fidai,
where neither of us is sitting currently.
Passerelle was delicious. It was so fun.
Oh my God. Guys, I had an asparagus soup that changed my life at Gregory Gourdet's restaurant.
And the only reason we had to order the soup was because they were out of some other asparagus dish that the waiter told us that they flew in from a cave in France or something like that.
Yeah,
like
the white asparagus are imported.
Yeah.
Who knows what tariffs are going to do to that
dish.
Oh,
God.
But as a result, we opted for the asparagus soup. And the waiter said, it's actually my favorite thing on the menu. And I wasn't skeptical because it's Gregory.
Right.
But I was like, okay, my guy, you're just trying to make us feel better about the fact that the white asparagus.
You don't have the cave asparagus, yeah.
Oh, my God. Was this soup not the most divine nectar?
The color, the texture. It was delicious. A little mint, a little kick to it. Fresh peas. It was such a good time. I would definitely, if you're in New York, recommend checking it out. It's actually part of the new Printemps.
He has
store.
Three restaurants in there. There's a raw bar, there's a cafe, and then there's Maison Passerelle, which is where we had dinner. It's also open for lunch.
Yum.
The decor was excellent. The service was excellent. The vibes immaculate. For those wondering, we got a bit of a potluck this week. We've got every segment possible at the top of this show. So someone did write in and ask us, does Gregory walk around the restaurant? The answer is no, but there is a chef's table. There's like a counter in the open kitchen. And he was definitely conversing with the people who were sitting at that counter. You could see him from every table.
Yeah, like he was up and at him. Yeah.
His presence was there.
Incredible service, incredible food. We didn't have any drinks because it was a Monday. We were not going up on a Monday. Mm-hmm. But just the decor was so refreshing for New York.
Yes.
It was like maximal and fun and like overstuffed and just very art deco. It was so cool. It would have been nice to just even sit in there and order nothing. It was just a very pleasant experience.
Yes, amen. And then we have one more potluck this week, which comes from Barbara on Instagram. Follow us on Instagram at Compliments to the Chef Pod. We love hearing everything that you have to say. Barbara says, hi, everyone. This is my judgy table for last week's episode. Judge Fasun Urkan looked like he wanted to be anywhere else than where he was. What a sour face.
Yes. Well, this was the female chef, right? Female judge.
Yes.
Yes, I actually can confirm that. I just rewatched the episode actually, or the first part of it.
You did?
With Alex, yeah, because he's a week behind. I was like, no, I'm killing some time. I need to go outside and touch grass. I can't be like watching reruns of the last
week. You're getting high on your own supply.
I know. But I did notice that too. There was like, she just found something wanting on every plate. And can't make them all happy.
So with that leftovers potluck complete, let's begin.
Oh, Nancy. As you said, episode 11, somehow 11. Somehow it's May. Somehow we're on episode 11. Thoughts and feelings. Talk to me about what you're seeing this ep.
So I was really excited to have a change of location. I was expecting our stay in Calgary to be a bit more mountainous than we were clearly in the city. I was not expecting that, but this was a fun one. We got our first Canadians, which you predicted would happen in Calgary.
I am literally a futurist.
Literally. But my thoughts on this were, I liked the quickfire. I thought it was fun. And I think that the elimination challenge was a bit underwhelming to me at this stage in the game. But, you know, I like berries. I like beef. So I wasn't mad about it. It just didn't pique my interest all that much.
You're not beefing on the berries. We're about to be beefing on some berries. Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I would say the quickfire was actually really fun. It was like the large scale challenge. And then I was actually, you know, the beef was, I know why we did beef and berries, but I always kind of equate like a pork with more of like a berry or a, you know, situation. So, but let's dive into it because we are both loving the quickfire. Okay, we get a little bit of a fun regional challenge right off the bat. We are talking Calgary Stampede, which is the world's largest outdoor rodeo. That has to smell a type of way.
Have you ever been to a rodeo?
I have not. Well, that's not true. I have been to a rodeo. So I grew up near like one of the largest, literally a place called the Farm Show Complex, and they would do one of the largest farm shows.
Wow.
I don't know if in the country, certainly in the region, it's in central Pennsylvania. And yeah, there would be people riding stuff and, you know, petting zoos and tractors. I mean, it was really anything you would equate with like a farm they had.
So as farm shows are wont to do.
But what about you, Nancy?
I went to a rodeo when I was a kid. I went to Colorado with my parents one summer, and we went to a rodeo. That's my only memory of it.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, like we saw like the bareback riding and all that jazz, some rodeo clowns. But that was my only time at a rodeo. So neither of our first rodeos, and not Tristan's first rodeo.
Certainly was not. So apparently we learn that the Calgary Stampede has a bit of a tradition of a pancake breakfast. So truck wagons would pull into town and they would flip pancakes at the first Stampede rodeo. And so that's what we're getting today. That tradition has persisted. And so the chefs have to take on their very own pancake breakfast. They'll be cooking for 50 diners and they only have 45 minutes. And those pancakes have to be handheld.
Okay. This was giving me hints of the iceberg lettuce challenge on the cruise ship to Alaska.
Oh, God. Yeah. Where everybody just made like a, what do you call it, salad?
Yes. I don't know that I'll die on this hill, but I don't know that I like large format quick fires. I love a large format elimination challenge, but I think it's already hard enough to conceive of and execute a dish in, let's call it 30 minutes. But to feed 50 people is, I think it's, talk about gilding the lily. I just think it's too difficult of a challenge to accomplish for anyone to do well.
Especially because I think the stovetop, the grill was giving people a lot of challenges.
Yeah.
But I hear you on that. I just love pancakes though. I mean, why are pancakes so good?
They just bring a lot of joy. Do you like a fluffy pancake? Do you like a thin flapjack? Do you like it sweet? Do you like it savory? What do you like?
I prefer a little bit thicker and a little bit less sweet. I think I like when the sweetness comes from the syrup and the butter combo. Yep. And a little bit of like gritty, like cornmeal. I do like the cornmeal or like buckwheat. What about you?
I am with you on the sweetness coming from the syrup. I like that. I am still a child. I love a chocolate chip pancake. Oh, why did no one do a chocolate chip pancake? Are you kidding me?
Well, I don't. Maybe it would be too messy handheld.
I like a chocolate chip pancake. I like a blueberry pancake. I do not like a banana pancake. Sorry, Jack Johnson.
Whoa, I am the opposite.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like chocolate chip pancakes. I can do blueberry, but to me, that is gilding the lily. Like, I actually like just a plain, simple pancake. But if we're going there, I'll do banana.
Oh, why? Well, you don't like chocolate chip cookies, so it makes sense that you don't like a chocolate chip pancake.
Yeah, it just sort of takes away everything that's I love about the pancake, which is the pancake, you know?
Okay. Big chip is coming for you because that's an insane chocolate chips take away what you love about a pancake.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't
your
like
hatred of chocolate chip, like variety of anything,
yeah,
is to me one of the hardest things about our friendship.
Yeah.
It's I've had to actively get over that.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a few things I wanted to say about this. First, Lana brings up that she has hibiscus in her box.
Crazy.
We
inclusion.
Need to understand the rules about this box.
I really thought it was
non-perishable items.
Yes. I really thought it was that. Also, we should have shouted out at the top.
Yes.
Our amazing interview with Vinny, which will be dropping next Monday, this Monday. But yeah, we talked a bit with him about what he brought in his box. It was very surprising. We learned a thing or two about the infamous box. So if you're not familiar, chefs mm-hmm. are able to bring a box of supplies, ingredients onto the show. He talks a little bit about what he brought. But yes, in this case, hibiscus surprised me. But I guess if it's a flavor that you like to cook with and it's mm-hmm. a little bit less readily available, mm-hmm. I can see why it goes in the box, yeah.
I love hibiscus. I was really excited when she said what she was doing. Let's talk about what everyone did. Shui, our first person to come up to bat for the judges, made a cornmeal pancake with scrambled eggs, lapchong, cheddar, and chili crisp avocado aioli. I was amazed that Mr. Scallion Pancake didn't make a scallion pancake for the pancake challenge.
Well, he did put some scallions. There were scallions.
So do we consider this a scallion pancake?
I don't know if there were scallions in the pancake. Oh. I just heard with scallions. So it could have been integrated, but it was decidedly not a scallion pancake,
it
which was very
pancake.
Interesting. I had the same thought.
I was hoping we'd get one, but alas. But
it looked good. It looked hefty. I'm just loving watching Shui lately.
Oh,
this
my God, yes.
This episode was another great Shui app.
He is crescendoing at the right moment.
Yes, dude. And he shout out to the table pancake, which is a brunch essential.
A brunch essential. If you're our best friend, Joni, you will eat the entire table pancake yourself.
And in that way, we honor her.
We honor you, Joni.
One that jumped out to me, I actually thought that Bailey went a really interesting direction.
Yeah.
I was shocked that nobody went the crepe route. Yeah. So she did a crispelle, which is like an Italian crepe, brown butter pecan, some plum. She also threw in some savory stuff with the mushrooms and the mm-hmm. spinach.
That was confusing to me.
That was confusing to me as well, but it worked.
Yeah. The reason why I think most people did not do the crepe route is because they would have to cook them to order.
True.
They only had that one hot plate and one pan. So she was doing those one at a time, which didn't trip her up, which is incredible. But, you know, I think that's probably why you didn't see more crepes.
That's a good point. Well, speaking of that, though, we had Cesar also cook to order.
Mm-hmm.
He did an XO cornmeal pancake. His was kind of soggy, couldn't pick it up.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit more skewing omelet.
Yes.
I still, you know what? Shoot your shot, Cesar. Like, I really appreciate that he's just kind of always
every
doing
time.
Crazy stuff with flavor and texture.
Yep.
But didn't stick this landing. We had a soggy bottom also coming from Lana's hibiscus mm-hmm. cream corn hoe cake, which also a super interesting idea to me to do cream corn. Makes sense.
It sounded really yummy. And then to put the sausage on top, I really liked the idea of hers. Maybe if she made the sausage patty smaller or yeah, it seemed like it was just a bit hard to handle. I didn't really understand why they couldn't use utensils.
Yeah, like why did it have to be handheld?
Yeah, I don't really know.
I don't want to touch my pancakes.
No,
like, you kind of want them sopping. Yeah.
I agree.
I don't know, maybe it's something about Canadian pancakes.
Alas, if there are any Canadians listening, please let us know if it's illegal to use cutlery for your pancakes.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's talk Massimo. Massimo struggled a bit, not because of his idea, but because of the cooking surface he was provided. He couldn't seem to get a hang of the griddle.
Yeah.
And so he went the, what are they called? Silver dollar pancakes.
Yes.
Root.
Man, that was like, I don't even know that they would be silver dollar size. They were super small. I kind of thought he was going to go a sandwich direction.
Brilliant.
Stack it, but he didn't. He went open face, which is all pancakes, I guess, are open face. Well, is a pancake stack technically a sandwich if you put stuff in between? Uh-oh.
Oh, God, Bits. You've just
short
opened
stack,
up.
Is short stack a sandwich?
Is a short stack a sandwich? You have just opened us up to the most insufferable people on the internet. I just want you to know.
So true.
People who debate whether things are sandwiches or not, I believe, need to touch grass.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it tracks with where I'm at right now.
A sandwich can be anything. Just enjoy it. Sandwiches bring nothing but joy into this world. Stop trying to define it. Just let it live.
If you like it, it's probably a sandwich.
Can I get any, man? Okay, we're not doing that this episode.
Okay, and then last but not least, we got to talk about Tristan, who did like a Venezuelan pancake situation.
Yes.
A cachapa.
I love that we finally got Tristan saying, you know, I was an army brat. I lived all over.
Yeah, right? Okay.
He has confirmed his Slumdog Millionaire status.
I feel like we did not learn this. I know I'm jumping ahead, but then we also learned that Lana staged at Kristen's restaurant and wasn't hired.
We gotta talk about that.
We didn't hear about that in the show. We had a really fun conversation with Vinny talking about his time on Boku's Door. Also didn't hear about that on the show. We didn't get a ton of backstory this season, which is interesting because these chefs are so interesting.
I could not agree with you more. The one thing I'll say about Tristan's dish is that I'd eat it.
Yeah. Hard agree.
Tristan just always does well. So in the top of this challenge, we have Schwei, Bailey, and Tristan. With Schwei taking the win. Shout out to our fantasy team. And then on the bottom, we had Massimo, Lana, and Cesar. Here's what I wanted to say about Massimo, because I didn't get to say it, because you just rudely steamrolled me. My understanding is that a silver dollar pancake is the size of the pancake that he made. And I actually thought, given that they were not allowed to use utensils to eat, it was a really thoughtful thing to do to make it a one-biter.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Perhaps sandwiching it would have been a good move. But I really felt like they dogged him for the size of the pancake.
And that's a great point.
Really was not a bad idea.
Right, right.
Maybe he put too much garnish on, sure.
He should have maybe if he got out ahead of that and it was part of the plan all along. They don't like it when you pivot. Even if you would have just said, you know, the pivot was the original idea, they tend to like it more than if you tell them that you pivoted.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I guess that is about the size of a silver dollar. I've always had them a little bit bigger, like not quite. We don't have to go there.
Yeah.
This was a fun quickfire. We see
leftover for next time is how big is a silver dollar pancake?
How big? We see Schwei take it.
Schwei takes it, and as a result, he gets 30 minutes of extra cook time in the elimination challenge.
Huge.
And $10,000 of quickfire, quick cash.
Quickfire, quick cash. Well, so let's get beefing on these beefing berries.
Yes. This elimination challenge. Talk to us about the challenge and how it's introduced.
Yes. So we meet Danya Bolzer, who's our guest judge, who's here representing I'm definitely going to mispronounce this, the Lekwani First Nations from Northern Canada. So she comes in to introduce that Stampede is also really important, or excuse me, notable because it's a time where ranchers and First Nations people come together to celebrate, share food, etc. And so this particular elimination challenge is a fusion of those two things. So the mm-hmm. chefs need to create a dish that incorporates beef and berries. We got a nice knife block challenge or a nice knife draw.
Can we talk about the selection process here?
Yeah, kick that off.
So to paint a visual, because podcasting is a visual medium, as our friends on Las Culturistas like to say, to paint a visual, there was a table of beautiful cuts of red meat, and then there was a knife block, and they were told that they would select the beef from the table and a knife from the knife block to select their berry. This was the most lackadaisical approach to a table of ingredients I think I have ever seen on Top Chef.
Yeah, like nobody was running for it. It was kind of, oh, I wanted that, but okay.
I wonder if that is a result of how Kristen sort of presented it. She was like, yeah, come forward. And they all start stepping forward and she goes, and take the one you want. And then you saw them get a little snippy with it.
Mm.
But for the most part, I was just – normally when there are a table of meats or ingredients to select from, it's a – talk about a stampede.
Right.
I thought we'd get some stampeding.
Well, I was also surprised that it was half knife draw, half not.
Yeah.
Why we didn't just go full in on the knife, just to like really drive home the random. But I guess they wanted to – at least somebody gets one thing that they want.
Mm-hmm.
So let's maybe run down high level what the chefs end up with ingredient-wise.
Yes.
But before we do that, one thing that we kind of glazed over in the first part of this was that we learn early in this semi-finale episode or whatever we're calling it.
Oh my gosh, yes. How did we forget to say this?
That the chefs who make it to the finale will be going to Milan.
Milan.
Which I would just like to give a quick plug for Milan, which is where I was famously. Episode 3 this season and could not record. Milan is... like awesome. I don't know why people don't talk about it enough. I think I feel like it gets a kind of weird rap on the sort of grand scheme of European cities. I loved it. The food was good. I was there. You know when you go and it's just the perfect weather? I think that also added to it. But I had a blast.
I went to Milan late summer of 2022. So we're all vaxxed. Like we're out having a good time traveling internationally. And here's why I think people don't universally love Milan. Milan is not what you think of when you're going to Italy. It is a commercial city. It is the center of the Italian corporate culture. There are tall buildings. There are like high rises. There are major thoroughfares. When Americans, I can only speak for Americans, but I think when a lot of tourists think Italy, they don't think booming metropolis.
Yeah,
they think quaint, ancient architecture, all this stuff. I mean, Milan does have the big square with the beautiful church, but it's just culturally, I believe, not as interesting to tourists as other cities in Italy. I think to your point that the food was good, it's Italy. The food's always going to be good. The best thing, in my opinion, that Milan has going for it is its accessibility to the lake region, mm-hmm. which is unlike anywhere I have ever been on Earth.
Yeah, yes.
I really think it was one of the most incredible like few days of my life going to those lakes.
Love them lakes.
Love them lakes. But anyway, enough about Milano. Let's
they go to the lakes.
Let's talk beef.
Beef.
Yeah, maybe they'll do a challenge in Lake Como. It's only a quick train ride away from Milan.
Yeah, be short. All right. Run us down the list, Nancy.
Yeah, run us down the list. We've got Lana with New York Strip and Hascap berries. We've got Massimo with tenderloin and elderberry, and he's stoked about it. We've got Bailey with beef cheeks and Saskatoon berries. We've got Tristan with flat iron and gooseberries. We've got Cesar with ribeye and chokeberries. And then we've got Schwei with short ribs and blackcurrant.
Love it.
Love.
I really don't know that. Well, so if, I don't know Saskatoon and I don't know Hascap. Okay. How funny were you? How much were you laughing when you saw those Hascap berries? They were like, they're sort of like a long blueberry. And then I'm like, how's that possible? And then they cut to a shot of it. And I'm like, that is a long blueberry.
It was a perfect description of what that berry looked like.
It actually looked like someone went into Photoshop and just sort of like extended the blueberry. Yeah, it's just a crazy
visual. I was going to
say
the exact same thing, but I was going to do it in the 2025 version, which it looks like someone went to ChatGPT and asked it to generate a photo of long blueberries.
Very true. Yes. Oh my goodness.
We are really dating ourselves with our references. Speaking of dating ourselves with our references, I do want to call attention to the shirt I'm wearing. Podcasting is a visual medium. I am wearing a Vampire Weekend collaboration shirt with Zabar's. Zabar's, a New York City grocery institution, and Vampire Weekend, a Columbia University, indie sleaze band from the early aughts.
Like, what about them is sleazy?
I don't know, but I fought tooth and nail to get this very exclusive collab merch from Zabar's, and I just feel it dates me in the most beautifully millennial way, as does your reference to Photoshop.
Love that. Thank you. Shout out. Wow. So where do we start? Let's maybe just run down in order on the way that these are served.
Heck yeah.
I think it was fun. We got a little, before we even got cooking, the chefs went out, got some dinner with Tristan.
Yeah. Well, Kristen. Tristan was there.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Sorry. But I told Nancy this. I was homesick today and I'm, you know, when you're like kind of sick and you're like, okay, I got it together. And then something just doesn't compute.
And we found it. And honestly, if that's the only mistake you made today, I think that you're in a good place.
Yeah, that and the chefs.
But let's quickly talk about that dinner with Kristen, because we have this beautiful moment between Kristen and Lana.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Lana says, we've actually met before. I staged at your restaurant and I was awful. I was new in my career. I didn't make a good impression. And you pulled me aside and you said, you're not getting the job, but keep doing this, keep trying, because you have a lot of potential, essentially. And it was sort of like her origin story hearing this. It was so beautiful.
So beautiful. Yeah, speaking of MCU. I thought to myself, I'm like, are there people in my life that I have met in that kind of level of intimacy that I wouldn't remember?
That's a good question.
Like, I'm actually, you know, I know we're younger than Kristen, but I kind of am... I think you also just meet so many more people in that line of work. Like, I would have a hard time, like, seeing a former coworker and not knowing that they were used to work.
I also think
that
the nature of staging is inherently, like, very ephemeral. You're in and out in a day.
That's very true. That's so true. Because we saw this happen on season 10 with Brooke, when the two judges were guys that she didn't end up hiring that, like, interviewed at a restaurant. I'm like, how do you not know that? But you're right. It is, like, way more of a revolving door. But Not to like make that situation less special, but because it really was. I mean, what a cool thing to come full circle and, like, you know, be sitting next to this person who set you on this cosmic journey. It's incredible.
I just loved it. And, you know, I always love when the judges get to have some casual time with the chefs.
Just laughing. I also love that kind of bar shape. The sort of like half moon circular bar. Oh, I love that.
Looked like a good burger, too.
It did look good.
Oh, love it. So, yes, let's talk about the food. We have, in order, Lana came out with her New York strip and hascap berries. New York strip is my favorite cut of meat.
I do love it.
I love it.
I think I loved it. I think I liked it the most of anything I saw here.
You mean cut-wise or preparation-wise?
Yeah, cut-wise.
I would agree with that. I would.
But,
Lana makes a grilled...
we're doing the most to, like, not talk about the food. Like, how else can we talk around the food?
Okay, from now on, we are only talking about the food. Lana made grilled New York strip with potatoes, hascap berry condiment, and smoked hascap berry jus.
Condiment. Dude, I swear, go back and watch the whole season. Don't worry about it. Listen for condiment.
Yeah, you're already doing it. Condiment, you're so right. We actually did add something to the counter this week, but we'll wait until we get to it.
Yeah.
So I loved the visual of Lana smoking the berries.
Yeah.
Did you catch that? It was beautiful.
It was so beautiful. I also loved the look of her meat on the plate. It looked delectable.
Yes. I like the sound of this dish. I think I would have really enjoyed this dish. Unfortunately for Lana, there were a few criticisms of the dish, primarily that the meat was over-rested. So it just had, I think, a texture that wasn't super appetizing, but splitting hairs. It's clear that we're splitting hairs this episode.
I don't know if I've ever thought about meat getting over-rested before.
I think it's happened on Top Chef before for sure. Yeah,
I don't think I've ever, maybe I just have never thought about it. But I do like, I don't like when it's not rested enough. Oh, I know that.
I know that. But yeah, like, here's the thing. It was cooked to the right temperature, and those were some thick steaks.
Yeah, thick quarts.
So she cooked it to the right temperature. She clearly cooked it well, but it was, I think, a critique on her execution in terms of plating and her run of show, as opposed to her skill in actually cooking the meat.
Agree. And I think in a similar, on the flip side, vein, we had Massimo, who was like really running out the clock with his beef tenderloin. So he's cooking way down to the wire.
This is third week in a row that he's like, I don't know if it's going to be good until I cut into it.
Yeah. We need to like make our own like counter for number of dishes that require cutting to determine if cook is good. So Massimo made beef tenderloin with umeboshi, pickled elderberry sauce, smoked kohlrabi. They were a vibin' with this one.
They said it was a showstopper.
I mean, look at him back there just completely basting that in butter. Just full on butter. I really appreciated that explanation too on the osmosis of the butter. But yeah, I mean, it looked delicious. The like fruit leather on top.
Yeah, we have to talk about the fruit leather.
I love fruit leather.
I have a question on the fruit leather, and I hate to be the one to bring this up. Did he pick a fruit leather up off the floor and put it and serve it?
Nancy, I wrote that down too, but I was like, I think maybe I was just delirious. Okay, so he did. He did.
I saw it. We need to rewind the tapes. In your rewatch next week with Alex, if you could just pause on that moment.
Yes.
He bent down, picked it up, and I couldn't tell because it was on parchment paper. So maybe it landed parchment side down and leather side up. But even so, I'm going to need to see some Reddit discourse on whether or not Massimo picked something off the floor.
Agree,
and served
Reddit,
it.
Get on it. Because, please. You know, I don't know what makes it – why is that not a talking point, you know?
How like did
in,
it not come
in
up?
In other seasons, that would be like the whole plot of the whole episode was he served something off the floor. So yeah, okay, let's
I really think that was a Top Chef first. I've never seen them pick up something off the floor and cook
it. just send it. no, I mean, but they loved it. Hey, who knows? Maybe it did something.
A little, as we used to say when I would lead backpacking trips, a little trail spice never hurt anybody. Next up we have Bailey, who got beef cheeks. I always just think beef cheeks is like the funniest kind
beef
of meat.
Beef cheeks.
Cheeks. With the Saskatoon berry. So she made a Saskatoon braised beef cheek. Say that 10 times fast. Creamy polenta, bruleed blue cheese, and roasted walnuts. This was a polarizing dish.
Yeah. Okay. Can I add, actually, to bring this full circle, when I was in Milan, I had bruleed gorgonzola dolce. I had what she made, and they had it as a dessert. Or like a dessert course, and it came with like not stewed cherries, but yeah, kind of caramelized stewed cherries. And it was really intense. Like I didn't actually order it. The person that I was with ordered it, and I had one bite and I was like, there is no world in which somebody can eat that entire thing. Like it is simply just for sharing or for the novelty of it. But when I saw her doing this, I was like, uh-oh.
See,
it is wild.
I don't like blue cheese, so immediately I was turned off. But I don't like blue cheese, but I respect those who do. And so I was like, okay, maybe she's unlocked some sort of genius thing.
Right.
I have no point of reference for what this tasted like, but it's interesting having someone, a real live person, who has experienced a bruleed blue cheese.
Well, and it somehow intensifies the stinky pungentness of the cheese when it is both warm and when it is enjoyed like alongside sugar. Like yeah. it actually amplifies the salt and almost like downplays the creaminess. Like it sort of just makes it really tangy and like really intense salty. Mm. I was shocked that there wasn't more commentary on like, I can't eat this whole thing, because that was the sensation that I had. This has happened now a couple times with Bailey where it's a little bit polarizing. Like some people are mm-hmm. like, whoa, it's usually like, wow, like that's doing something crazy. And then it's a matter of if you like the crazy yes. that it's doing or if you don't.
The other thing that's notable about Bailey's dish is that she added pomegranate juice to her berry mixture. And I believe the judges felt as though they lost the flavor of the berry because it was masked by the pomegranate.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah. I don't know.
Hate to see it.
Yeah, hate to see that. Yeah, you hate to see that.
This to me was the type of dish that if she were to revise it and do it again, it would be perfect the second go uh-huh. around. It has good bones.
I do like that it was a bit of a theme that everybody kind of like put something on their steak. Like we yes. saw Massimo with the fruit leather.
Yes.
We had Bailey with her stuff. Schwei, yeah, we'll get to that. But there was a lot of large garnishing.
Large garnishing. And not a single beef tartare.
Not a single beef tartare. That is crazy.
I was amazed that we didn't get a beef tartare.
That's a great point.
But it's I need to go back and check the books. I'm trying to keep a running tally in my head of who has done the tartars. And maybe there's a feeling that you get one tartar per season.
Yeah, you're kind of donezo.
But we know Massimo's done one. I'm pretty sure Schwei has done one.
Vinny.
I'm pretty certain Tristan has done one.
Yeah. I think Lana did one.
Do you? We need to go back and look.
I think so.
Yeah, she did. She did. You're so right. So maybe they feel as though they've done their tartars for the season.
Tartared out.
Not tuckered out, tartared out.
Tartared out.
But let's talk about Tristan, who made a winning tartare earlier in the season. Tristan had Alberta flat iron, which he made with smoked kohlrabi, gooseberries, and bone marrow pemmican.
Okay, I had to Google what pemmican was because curious.
Enlighten us.
Pemmican, I don't think that this is quite how he prepared it, but it is it's essentially like a survival food because mm-hmm. it's super highly caloric. It's usually made up of like dried meat and a fat or suet or something like that. And then in certain instances, it'll have dried berries also combined. It's almost like a really rudimentary, you know, not protein breakfast bar, but like protein bar. Yeah. So I thought that was so interesting. I don't know that any berry made its way into the pemmican. Maybe it did.
No, it didn't. He did the chokeberry reduction. That was Cesar. Tristan did
gooseberry.
Ooh, a gooseberry. So
yeah.
I mean, obviously Tristan is going to make an elevated something that he's absolutely never made once in his life before and excel. Like,
yeah,
he crushed it. I think that they were blown away by. It was a very interesting preparation. Like Brian Voltaggio to me is the OG meat and potatoes on Top Chef, and we have come a very long way. From meat and potatoes. These were, on the whole, incredibly inventive preparations right. of beef, which is just, I think, not as interesting as other it's an excellent protein, but I don't think it lends itself to as interesting preparations as other proteins.
For sure.
Because it's such an intense flavor and it's very heavy. And so I would say that I give my flowers to all of these chefs because they made beef dishes I have never seen before.
Yes,
all of them.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is hard to do.
And they're all fairly distinct, even though the criteria was so standardized.
Yes.
Like there's only so many different things you could do with a berry with a beef, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Having never done it, I can confidently say that.
But I think it speaks to the level of talent of these chefs. We even saw Kristen when she was in the diner with the chefs being like, this is a really, really, really good season.
Yeah.
She was
really
encouraging them and I think explaining to them the level to which they have outperformed expectations.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that this challenge, first, it's six of them. You know, this is cream of the crop. And I think that the results of this challenge just go to show how talented and interesting and creative this batch of chefs is.
Yes. Completely agree.
Completely. So let's talk about, I mean, we want to talk about innovative. Let's talk about Cesar, who always does something kooky.
Kooky, kooky. Grilled ribeye, rutabaga reduction.
Bone marrow cornbread.
Yeah, choke berries. Bone marrow cornbread. You know what? When you put a cornbread on it, you've got my vote. I think cornbread is the best, is a top 10 food. I love cornbread.
I know this about you.
And you know what the thing I love about cornbread is? You can actually get cornbread anywhere and it's going to be solid. Like if I went to the grocery store and you know when they kind of just like make a, you know, sell little chunks of cornbread you can just buy near the soups and stuff. It's usually solid. It's very hard to find a bad cornbread. The worst thing you can do is dry it out. And I actually find that homemade cornbreads are, you know, get more dried out than even what you buy out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think listeners know I do my annual chili night. And this year.
You got good cornbread.
That was boxed like from the mix.
That's what
cornbread.
I'm saying.
And it was delicious. And we were all hanging out afterwards in our chili stupor. And Bitch just excused herself to the buffet and silently ate an additional 3 portions of cornbread.
Yeah, I had like 5 pieces of cornbread that night. But it was one of those situations where you keep cutting like small pieces and then eventually you just had half the pan. oh my God, I just love cornbread. So yeah, I would love to eat that. What were the chefs saying about this one? I think the beef was cooked really perfectly. The cornbread was a hit. I think the berry, I think that they were just disappointed that he didn't let the tannins do their thing.
Yeah.
You know, you had a super tannic berry and they kind of, he was just, how do I tamp this down? How do I like smooth that out? And everybody was sort of like, dog, like you should have just rolled with that. It's like a big old glass of red
wine. Yeah. It seems as though he was trying to balance the berry against itself as opposed to against the steak.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he made what was probably a beautifully balanced sauce, but then when paired with the beef, it didn't quite counteract the flavors in the beef the way that a very acidic berry would have.
Damn. But I love that he keeps going.
I know. He just keeps doing it. I also loved when he was talking about how he just takes his picnic blanket and shakes a tree and lets the berries fall and eats them. Oh, my God.
Wait, what was the comment that Tristan made? Like, when Cesar brings out the fruit, we're all fucked. Something like that. That was so true. Like, this man, anytime that he just has a way, the way that Tristan can kind of, like, yoink and, like, pull on a regional inspiration or like a past life lived. Cesar has just experience with extremely random ingredients
and he's so
or like a direct
about
passion
it.
Of like or relationship with them. Yeah.
Yeah. His attitude and energy is so wonderful.
It is.
He is a breath of fresh air in every single challenge. He just says, yeah, you know, I'm just enjoying it and having fun and thinking about the ways that this food makes me happy. And oh my God, I love him.
Love.
Love.
Speaking of love.
Speaking of love, Shuai.
I loved the look of this dish. I just love that Shuai does whatever the fuck he wants. And he it's not even like he's being, oh, look at me. He just is like, I just want to make stuff that my family makes and my mom makes, my grandma makes. And this looked so, this was so interesting to me.
Yes.
Stuffed cabbage, braised short rib, wild rice congee with a wild currant black
pepper. Add it to the counter, sauce. A porridge. A
congee. I really liked that we heard from the guest judge this week, Danya, that she was like, this reminds me so much of something my mom would make for us for breakfast, which I'm like, yo, that's hardcore. You're eating this for breakfast. But it's different. I mean, it's cold and rustic up there.
Yeah, it was just – I love when someone resonates emotionally. This was – Schweiz was the most emotional dish on the table. It told the biggest story. Yeah. The other chefs, I think, showed incredible technical prowess in this challenge and very innovative flavors and thinking and all those good things. But Shuai cooked a very emotional dish.
Yeah.
And I think you could feel that at the table.
Yeah. Gail took me somewhere else entirely. What a nice thing to say.
Yeah.
I love that Tom was like, oh, beef and congee, it's like heavy on heavy. but it's flavorful. And everybody was like, nobody even picked that up.
Yeah.
Like, okay, anyways, back to why it's
great.
Back
to how delicious it is.
Yeah.
But oh my God. This was an incredible showing. The challenge itself was not super interesting to me, but I was amazed at how interesting the outputs of the chefs were. Because really, I don't think we've ever seen cooking of beef like this on Top Chef.
Mm-mm, they brought the beef. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Where's beef the beef? Is less
for dinner.
Episode 11 of Top Chef Season 22. The beef?
So we come to the final judges' table. Massimo, Schwei, and Tristan.
Woo!
Were you surprised by the outcome? Where was your head at?
I wasn't, but I was rooting for Schwei. Me too. Because I wanted him just to sweep the episode.
Yes.
But I think Gail summed it up perfectly. Massimo's dish was a showstopper. It took the same way his stunt dish was a showstopper. Yeah. The same way when he did like the chicken thing in the last episode was really incredible. He knows, I think, how to blow them out of the water from a technical standpoint. Yeah. That is just really fun to watch him get rewarded for. I would have loved to see Schwei win because, as I said, I think he had a really emotional dish. And I like when that type of storytelling is rewarded, but he was on the top, so no complaints.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tristan's just a legend. I am thinking in this moment back to the talking head. We actually didn't cover this at all, but in the previous episode, Tristan and Massimo were talking about like where they cook from, where their inspiration comes from. And Tristan has this talking head saying like, Massimo is everything I'm trying to cook against.
Yeah, in my career. I just watched that actually.
Yeah. Oh, rewatched it.
Because, you know, for whatever reason, I just rewatched last week's episode before recording for this week's episode. But he calls that out. And it's very true. You know, it's come through a bit. It's definitely not like they're not like making that a thing with Tristan. Yeah. It's not his sort of I think probably they're setting this up now that the momentum is building. But when you look back at what Tristan has put out, it's very obvious that he sort of does live that point of view. And I love that. That's why Top Chef is amazing because everybody has a different lens. And yeah, Massimo is like full on. Massimo is very much the kind of like old school Top Chef.
Chef. Which we love him for because he's bringing us so much entertainment this season, which we love.
Yes.
The one comment that I wanted to call out about Schwei's dish that I really thought hit the nail on the head was Tom said it was completely different from a steakhouse dish. Which I think really encapsulates what was different about his preparation.
Right, right.
So then unfortunately, because this is the top six, by default on the bottom we have Bailey, Lana, and Cesar. All of them got similar standard feedback around the berry not being present enough or being misused. Where my berries at? But then each of them individually got other small critiques. The first was that for Bailey was around that bruleed blue cheese. It didn't work the way that she wanted to. It didn't tie things together. Lana got the critique around the aromatics on her dish overpowering the main event. And then Cesar was around the balance of sweetness and acidity.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. I mean, I guess all valid critiques. Look, I'm not driving. As I said, I'd eat every single dish that was made this entire episode.
That's what Tom was like, a good dish is going home.
Yep.
Which is, I don't know if I would prefer going home on a bad dish or a good dish, you know? Mm-hmm. It sucks either way. But yeah, that was certainly not the case tonight. And unfortunately, we saw Lana leave.
This hurt.
Ugh. Pretty pissed off about it.
I am pissed off about it too. Her exit was so gracious, firstly.
Okay. I wanted to double click on that because I had the same thought. I was like, my goodness. What a class act.
What a class act. And we got something that you don't really get a lot on Top Chef, which is you audibly hear all three judges say, I'll see you in New York. Like all, which was really sweet. And I think, look, Tom, Gail, and Kristen are very present in the food media space. They go to a ton of events. They are big player. Tom in particular is a huge player in the New York restaurant scene. Gail is obviously in the media scene. I think Kristen sort of floats back and forth between those two. They do not say this to everyone who exits Top Chef. Yeah, and they have an opportunity, because they don't only stay in New York, they travel around. And I think it really is a testament to Lana and what she's doing that they all made a point to say, like, we will see you again in New York. Just to show her support that, you know, she did a good job. And I was happy to hear them say that. And I was just really sad to see her go.
I know. But yeah, what a way to go, though. What a way.
What a way to go.
So I'm going to eat that.
Yeah, I'm eating that big time.
I'm eating that big old beef.
But okay, that brings us to a judgy table. Bits, do you have a judgy table?
I do.
All right. Well, then, Bits, your judgy table starts now.
Bathrooms at restaurants. I have a few critiques.
Okay.
One, when you have to go through multiple doors to actually access the bathroom in a restaurant, that's
yes.
Sin number one. Mm-hmm. Sin number two, you only have one bathroom for the restaurant if you're a large restaurant. I'm sorry. Do you like when people are just standing outside of the toilet room, just like waiting in your tight ass New York restaurant? Like, at least give us a waiting area. I don't know. And then on top of that, three, the people who use bathrooms and somehow are in there for over, to me, you can get in and out of there in under 2 minutes. Any more than that, you probably shouldn't be out of the house right now because there's something wrong. So just like bathrooms in restaurants are just such a sore subject for me.
I love that judgy table. Did you recently go to an awful bathroom?
Well, so I will say that I had to go through multiple doors at Gregory's. Mm. That's not true. I only went through one. But it was like I had to go through multiple spaces. And then just routinely, I feel like every place in New York is like somehow a drag. Like, I just hate having to wait for the bathroom. Just have more bathrooms. Yes.
I agree with that. You feel like such a sucker waiting online for the bathroom.
Yes. Like,
and then you do the awkward dance of like, look at her. Did I actually push the door, or like, was it a pull, right, or like, am I waiting too long? Really, going to the bathroom at a restaurant is a really dehumanizing experience, is what it comes down to.
I feel dehumanized.
That was a bit dramatic.
Yeah, that was a bit dramatic. I mean, this as a judgy table is a bit dramatic. Like, what are they going to do? It's like a small ass restaurant that we're going to put a second toilet in. Like, no.
You know what I really, really, really want to do? And I have always said I wanted to do this, and I've never actually executed on it, which is rare because normally when I have dumb ideas, I go whole hog.
Yeah.
Like this podcast. But I have always wanted to take photos of, you know, in New York City restaurants that are so tiny where the sink is like this teeny tiny thing and the toilet's underneath the sink. You're just in this incredibly small space. I want to do a series of photos of the tiny bathrooms of New York City, and then in my bathroom at home, just have framed photos of all the tiny bathrooms of New York City.
So you can just think about how miserable your bathroom experience was elsewhere and how lucky you are to be in your home.
I just think it's a really funny way to decorate a bathroom.
I personally always take photos of bathrooms that I like. I have at least three restaurant bathroom photos on my phone that I can think of.
Can you name the restaurants?
One was actually in Milan. The other one was, what's that place that's in Soho that is, they have like the Baked Alaska, and it's a little bit more seafood skewing. Oh, God.
Oh.
I can't remember, but they also Principe? Have a very fun, no, I'll look it up for time. Great bathroom. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's my judgy table. And a little bit of, I guess, I don't know.
Okay, I have a judgy table. It's really stupid. It's probably not going to fill a minute. So, Nancy, your judgy table starts now. Matchbox culture in restaurants, specifically in New York City. You inspired me, Bits, with your restaurant themed. I love collecting matchboxes.
Yes.
A lot of people love collecting matchboxes. The matchbox game in New York City has gotten a little bit out of hand, and here's why. A lot of the more popular restaurants are withholding of their matchboxes, and they only give them out to like customers they deem cool enough to have their matchboxes.
Really?
Yes. And I went to Dante this weekend, which what used to be one of New York's great haunts, and then, you know, Australians bought it and turned it into like the avocado toast thing that it is now. And they used to have these really cool matchboxes. And I asked for one this weekend when I was there, and they wanted to charge me $10 for
no.
a matchbox. Is that not bullshit?
That's so
$10
stupid.
For a matchbook? Who do you think you are, Dante?
Oh my God.
You literally are an Australian import. Like, do not come to me with that sort of nonsense. On the flip side, shout out to Gregory Gourdet's restaurant, Maison Passerelle. Beautiful matchbook.
Beautiful. Big
it's a
matchbox.
Long red yes. matchbox. Oh my gosh. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. It's one of the crown jewels of my collection at this point. Anyway, these are my thoughts.
Okay. One more shout out for Maison Passerelle. Passerelle? Passerelle.
I have no idea. I've been saying Passerelle in my head, but I could be wrong.
One of those. It was unbelievably awesome. So please go. Nancy, that brings us to the end of this. Wonderful journey. For the record, we recorded at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. My goodness, what an ep. We're not going to Milan next week. We're going
I don't
to,
think
the
we're
going
to Milan next week, but where we are going next week is to our interview with Vinny. Vincenzo Lacero comes to the pod. We had such a fun time with him. I don't want to spoil anything, but an Apple Bowl does make an appearance.
Yes, it
a
does.
A physical Apple Bowl.
And you
Bowl.
Don't have to wait long for it.
Yeah, so that's our plug. Listen to Second Helping on Monday and tune in next week to Compliments to the Chef. Bye.
Woo! Bye.